Cooperation between Nordic countries has had its ups and downs over the years. The 1520 Stockholm bloodbath was a bit of a low when the Danes massacred most of the Swedish nobles in their own capital. Okay, that was a while ago now, and they've almost put it behind them, but the Norwegians, Icelanders and Finns also have memories of the centuries when they were ruled by the Swedes and or the Danes. Nordic cooperation enjoyed a purple patch after World War II and right up until the end of the 20th century, but in the past 10 years, the migrant crisis and now COVID has sorely tested cross-border friendships. Nordic cooperation looks like it's having a bit of a wobble. I find the relationships between these peoples really fascinating. How the history of these countries can still be felt today in their almost family-style relationship, but also in how much culture they share, the similar ways their societies are structured and function, how their sheer Nordicness, basically, acts as an unusually strong and usually harmonious bond. You know, when Nordic people hear other Nordic voices around the swimming pools of Thailand or in the bars of New York or wherever, they still feel a kinship. They still flock together. We've teamed up with the Nordic Council of Ministers for 5 special editions of the Foreign Desk Explainer, delving deeper into topics of global importance from the region: green transport, education, cultural collaboration, biodiversity and protecting nature, and the subject of this episode, national and political cooperation. How have the Nordic countries worked together during this time of crisis, or how have they not? What are the emerging areas for Nordic cooperation and the nature of the changes we're about to see? And a question I've been asking for years, why was there never a proper Nordic Union, like a northern version of the EU? I'm Michael Booth, and this is the Foreign Desk Explainer.
Even the Swedes are interested in Nordic cooperation.
If we can achieve that, I think it's true cross-border living for people.
I think the one burning issue, I think, for all countries is the access to health for trans people.
That was Mana Eid of FREE, the Norwegian Organisation for Sexual and Gender Diversity, whom we'll be hearing from later in the programme. Talking to Mana, it sounded like things seemed to be going in the right direction in terms of cooperation between national LGBT groups, but elsewhere, dark clouds have been gathering over pan-Nordic cooperation. This is a bit of a downer for those of us who are fans of this part of the world and look to the Nordics as a kind of role model for getting along with one's neighbours. You can't help feeling, if the Nordics can't get their act together and work harmoniously, what chance is there for the rest of us? But of course, though there have been hiccups recently, there are also encouraging signs, particularly from civil society organisations and the private sector, businesses and finance, for example, as we will hear later. My name is Michael Booth. I'm Monocle's man in Denmark and the author of a book about the Nordic region, The Almost Nearly Perfect People, for this special edition of the Foreign Desk Explainer in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers. We're going to be looking at Nordic cooperation, taking the temperature of cross-border relations in this part of the world. We're going to be travelling around the region in today's programme, hearing from politicians, researchers and enthusiasts of Nordic harmony in Oslo, Stockholm, Helsinki and Copenhagen, to hear about what's gone wrong and how things might get better. There's probably no one better placed to give an historic overview of Nordic cooperation than Bertel Haarder, a Danish Liberal Party politician for nearly half a century, and former government minister many times over, whose career has always been intertwined with Nordic cooperation at many levels. As Bertel Haarder heads towards his retirement at the next Danish election, this year he's serving as the president of the Nordic Council, which was formed in 1952 as the forum for cooperation between the member parliaments. Today, it's got 87 members from Denmark, Finland, Sweden, Iceland, Norway, the Faroes, Greenland and Åland. I went along to meet Bertel Haarder at the Danish Parliament in Christiansborg Palace, Copenhagen. First of all, I asked him to give a brief rundown of the extraordinary changes he's witnessed in his 46 years in Nordic politics.
The changes can be described in the following way. As long as we had the Cold War going on, there was very little we could do to increase Nordic cooperation because the Soviets would not allow Finland. Therefore, the Swedes would not participate anyway. Then came the fall of the Berlin Wall, and suddenly we were free to cooperate, also when it comes to foreign policy and defense. So that created in the 90s and in the zeros. A great optimism. But then came the refugee crisis, and after that the corona crisis, which really has brought Nordic cooperation to a low point. I have never seen anything like it, with a lot of distrust among countries, and particularly distrust among people in the border areas. You can look at the bridge and tunnel over the Baltic. In 2013, there were 17,000 people who passed that every day. 5 years later, it was down to 12. And now I'm sure it's even lower, because people don't want to base their existence on a life where they live in one country and work in another, because they have seen the mistreatment of commuters.
Do you see things, any signs that things are getting better in terms of the borders?
Not really. The corona restrictions have been a lot worse, because they concern also the way people work together, travel, etc. Whereas the refugee crisis was simply a matter of having more police on the border. But the corona restrictions have been a lot worse, and they have been, to a large extent, irrational, but very popular. And that's why governments, particularly prime ministers, have been tough. They get more votes if they close the border, even though it makes no sense.
Now the asylum seeker crisis is gone and COVID is disappearing, what are the excuses?
Well, I'm afraid that some of these restrictions have become so popular, particularly those who has to do with borders. They're so popular that I'm afraid that some of it will be permanent, even though it's against the Schengen Agreement. I very much hope we can get back to the Schengen Agreement.
But moving away from borders, what about military cooperation? Are those things on track?
Military cooperation will no doubt increase, even though only three of us are in NATO and three of us are in the EU, and Denmark is the only country in both. In spite of this division, we are cooperating more and more and more, and I'm absolutely convinced that we will cooperate much more in the future.
Often from the outside, it seems so obvious to have a Nordic Union. Why have you not had a shared currency? Why have you not integrated more? You seem to share so many values, social welfare state and Lutheranism and often languages.
That's a very good question. And I have asked that question many times. We, in fact, had a money union 150 years ago. That's why we all have kroner, except the Finns who have the euro now. But they also had kroner. But I think it was during the First World War it was split up. We are so much alike. So why in the world didn't we have a union in the first place? But if the Nordics had gone together, nobody would have been able to prevent us from that. And the people wanted it.
When the euro crisis struck and the economic crisis struck in 2008, was there not more discussion of it then?
No, not really. We had a discussion in 1969, I think, when we tried to form an economic union, Nordic Economic Union. But that failed because of the Soviet Union that didn't allow Finland, and therefore also the Swedes said no. And then Denmark entered the EU, and later Sweden and Finland. The Norwegians had fought so much for their independence from Sweden that they were not so eager to join another union.
But now Norway has very much gone its own way. Finland, too, has kind of sided with the EU in terms of economic union. The future, looking ahead, what are your predictions for the coming 5-10 years for Nordic cooperation?
We will definitely not get a Nordic Union, but we may get something that has been proposed by the Finnish scholar Johan Strand. His book is not called A Nordic Union, it's called Nordic Unions.
That was Bertel Haarder, president of the Nordic Council, very considerately queuing up our next interviewee. Monocle's Finland correspondent Petri Bertsov went along to meet Professor Johan Strang at Helsinki University, to hear his take on Nordic cooperation and where it's gone wrong.
The history of Nordic cooperation is full of different failed attempts at creating a more formalized Nordic cooperation, starting with the Scandinavist movement in the 19th century, and then various plans for defense unions and economic unions and customs unions during the second half of the 20th century. All of these have failed for different reasons, but I guess that the main reason is that the Nordic countries have a bit different economic and security interests, which the politicians have seen themselves forced to prioritize. So Denmark has always looked to the south. They've been concerned with Germany and continental Europe, and Finland has been looking to the east and being concerned about the Soviet Union or about Russia and these relations, while Norway has looked to the Atlantic. So it has always been kind of difficult to get a common vision of the region's place in Europe.
Studies show that the citizens of the different five Nordic countries are in favor of more and deeper cooperation. Yet, somehow on the political level, things are moving more slowly. What do you think explains this discrepancy?
Always the citizens that demand more cooperation while the politicians hesitate. I guess that the politicians, they are forced to take the economic realities or the security realities into account, while the citizens are very eager for more cooperation. And I guess that the strong support for Nordic cooperation, it might also have something to do with the fact that we have never had a common budget to quarrel about. So it's easy to be a supporter of Nordic cooperation, but there's so very, very little at stake. But at the same time, I mean, there is something that is called the Nordic Phoenix effect. So every time that a grand plan for Nordic unification has failed, there has been an outcry, a public outcry, and the general public has forced the politicians to compensate in some way. So when the defense union plans after the Second World War failed, the general public demanded more Nordic cooperation, so they created the Nordic Council. And when the Nordic Economic Union failed in the early 70s, there was a public outcry, and the politicians saw themselves forced to create the Nordic Council of Ministers.
Where are we right now, historically?
The COVID situation and the corona crisis have definitely been a huge backlash for Nordic cooperation. We dealt with the pandemic in very different ways. I mean, Sweden was the outlier here, and as Sweden is in the middle of the Nordic country, it created a lot of problems. What we have here is a situation where people feel that Nordic cooperation has failed. We didn't have a common strategy. We ended up closing borders and so forth, and now there is a demand for Nordic cooperation. And the politicians they've listened to this, and they are very interested in polishing their image and so forth. So I think that we are now in some kind of moment of opportunity for Nordic cooperation, because even the Swedes are interested in Nordic cooperation, and that has not been the case for several decades, I think. But it's also, I mean, a basic fact that when something huge happens in our region, or in the world indeed, the Nordic countries and the Nordic politicians tend to look to each other for support and comfort. And even this has also happened in the pandemic, despite the fact that we have had different strategies and so forth.
Why has the pandemic response been so disparate between different Nordic countries?
Yeah, well, the huge problem has, of course, been that infection rates have been so much higher in Sweden, and the fact that Sweden has perhaps had another strategy from the beginning. I see this as a failure of Nordic cooperation, not at the political level, but when I teach Nordic cooperation for my students, I always say that the governments, they always fail to cooperate, but we have this transnational Nordic bureaucracy and transnational Nordic expertise, which works irrespective of the governments. And this kind of undervegetation of Nordic cooperation, it always takes care of the basic structures of Nordic people-to-people interaction. But this pandemic has proved, I think, that this undervegetation is not as strong as we believed. It has been down-prioritized by the politicians for decades. And that's why we kind of ended up with so different strategies, because the public health authorities and the civil servants, they don't communicate with each other as much as they used to do.
You've previously said that the word Nordic has become more of a brand.
Previously, I think that Nordic and Nordic cooperation was very much about creating a community. So the Nordic was a kind of a transnational space where people from different Nordic countries met in order to learn from each other and to do things together and to go out in the world together. At some point, I think that the Nordic has become a brand and some kind of self-evident characteristic of our nation states instead. So we're very interested in branding Finland or branding Norway as a Nordic country, but we're not that interested in Sweden or Denmark. We can even think that the Danes and the Swedes are Nordic in the wrong way because they don't serve school lunches or they have privatized some sector or something like that. So I think that this is what has happened with this kind of hype of the new Nordic, this and that, that the Nordic has become a characteristic of the nation rather than a community.
That was our Finland correspondent Petri Bertsoff talking to Professor Johan Strang at Helsinki University. To Sweden now. In Stockholm, our reporter Richard Orange caught up with Josefin Karlring, Secretary General of the Nordic Association in Sweden. The Nordic Association was founded back in 1919. It's the first proper forum for Nordic cooperation, non-political, focusing on languages, culture, history and society. The association has recently undertaken major research into what Nordic people want from cooperation between their countries. And as a result, Karlring places her faith in the future of Nordic cooperation very much in people power.
We made a survey in 2020 where 8 out of 10 Swedes say that we want to work more together in the Nordics. And we want to work more on innovation or crisis management. So there's a will among people to work together. But I think that it's important now to sort of find a common ground, realize or see the situation for what it is.
Sweden in particular has been very forthright and very open about how it feels that the behavior of particularly Denmark and Norway during the pandemic. What can be done to heal that damage and to repair relations over the border issue?
I'm not sure that the damage is going to be a big thing going forward. I think that the situation that we've been in over the past year has been a unique situation. We rather want to see this situation as a way to sort of look at the positive things that has come out of this. This is an opportunity, and I think it's a wake-up call for us to realize that we've taken each other for granted, and this is the time now to sort of reinvent what Nordic cooperation should be about.
And going really big picture, beyond geography, what do the countries in the Nordic region have in common?
Well, I think that we have our values as being open or inclusive. Something that's really unique to the Nordic countries are tillit, which is the Nordic gold, so that we believe in each other. And so we have our values, we have a shared history, we share a lot of culture and ways to look at the world.
That was reporter Richard Orange in Stockholm talking to the Secretary General of the Nordic Association of Sweden, Josefin Karlring. So far, we've heard it's a bit of a mixed picture when it comes to Nordic cooperation across borders, but not so fast. The dream that a resident of one Nordic country could move to live and work or study in another and have their social security services switch and their banking services follow them might not be so far away, as I found out when I spoke down the line with Tor Alvik of the Norwegian Digitalization Agency in Oslo about something called NoBid.
NoBid is a cooperation project between the Nordic and Baltic countries where we try and use our digital identities cross-border so that you can access services in another Nordic or Baltic country. For instance, like in education, if you want to go and study in a university in another country, if you are going to work, seeking employment, or paying taxes, or getting your permits. It could also be for health services, accessing online records, getting e-prescriptions, and other services like that. And it could also be outside the public sector, for instance, in banking or other private service areas.
So, for example, a Swede living in Denmark temporarily or working or even visiting on holiday, if they run out of their medical prescription, they can go to the local pharmacy and get their pills.
Absolutely. And the NoBid is one part of this. We also have other projects like on e-prescriptions so that you can identify yourself in digital services.
And what stage are you at so far with the project?
We have covered most of the Baltic countries and Denmark. We are now in process with Sweden and then continuing with Norway later in the summer. And then we hope to finish up with Finland and Iceland later on, maybe next year.
Yeah, Tor, I do hear rumours that the Finns are dragging their feet in this. You might be too much of a diplomat to point the finger, but there is a sense that the political will hasn't been equal in all five of the Nordic countries, and that some have been a little bit slower on the uptake. Is that true?
I think that you have to see that there are differences in how the approaches has been in the different Nordic countries. Some have had one approach to digital identity, for instance, like in Denmark, where you have had one digital identity for the whole society for a long time. In Finland, the picture is more diverse. You have several of the Finnish banks having their own solutions. But this is changing, so now Finland is actually moving ahead.
Are there any political concerns in any of the countries? I'm thinking about security risks or loss of sovereignty in some aspects, or just cost.
I think the concerns on privacy and the solutions themselves has been ironed out in both through the legislative process that we have with the EU and the system itself, which actually supports privacy and the part where you can identify yourself with good certainty. Of course, it's always a prioritization between projects, cost, staffing, and where to put the effort, like in any digitalization project. I think we have to acknowledge that some of these processes takes a little time. But when you compare it to how long time it's been in setting up digital identity nationally, we are quite actually moving quite fast.
I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that there's no real resistance from the populations of these countries against this kind of digital integration of very personal, intimate details. When you look to the UK, which for many years discussed having even ID cards, and there seemed to be a resistance just at ground level against those. How do you explain that difference?
Well, that I guess is because of the trust that the population in both the Nordic and Baltic countries have in the government. And that's very special and a very good basis for building a digital infrastructure.
There have been a few recent issues. I'm speaking from Denmark, where health information has been shared with private companies, for example. Do you think that kind of misfire affects general trust?
There will always be single cases of security breach, but it's what we do and how we handle these cases that could keep the trust.
What's the blue sky scenario for this kind of technology and integration?
That you as a citizen doesn't have to think about it at all, that you just access a service in another country and doesn't seem different from you from accessing services in your own home country. If we can achieve that, I think it's true cross-border living for people.
The Nordic countries are traditionally forerunners when it comes to LGBT rights. Norway, Finland, Sweden and Denmark all feature in the top 10 of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, the ILGA's, rainbow ranking for LGBT quality of life in Europe. It's a bit surprising, perhaps, then, that cooperation between the Nordic LGBT associations has been patchy, until now at least.
So my name is Marna Eide, and I am the Director of International Programs within FREE, the Norwegian Organisation for Sexual and Gender Diversity. I think there's been kind of sporadic cooperation in the past. We haven't had funding, actually, to meet and network. So the spaces that have been available have usually been the conferences at the International Gay and Lesbian Association, ILGA, conferences in Europe. And then we've tried to organise kind of small Nordic meetings during the conference. We had a meeting between the Nordic LGBT organisations in Copenhagen in January 2020. And it was the first actual meeting that we had in one of the Nordic countries for a very long time.
Why the slow progress? I guess people outside of the region look upon the Nordics as leading and the most progressive in LGBT issues. I think that would be a bit surprising to people. What's been the problem?
I think part of it has been funding, and part of it has been where the focus of the organisations are. I mean, a lot of the funding that we get for programmatic work is about doing work nationally, so there isn't any funding actually available to do something outside of one's own border. And that's still a challenge, so we're really looking forward to applying from there will be funding available for next year. That's coming from the Nordic Council. What we hope to see from increased cooperation is several things. I think one of the things that is really important for us is that the Nordic countries are quite similar when it comes to the way that they work. So a lot of the work that is going on in the different countries, many of the challenges that the LGBT organizations in the Nordic countries are facing are very similar. Within the different Nordic countries, a lot of the laws are in place, but there's still a lot lacking when it comes to implementation. So you'll still have a lot of bullying going on in schools. You'll still have a lot of health professionals who are not necessarily sensitive about the people that they receive. You'll have police in different countries not really sensitized when it comes to reporting hate crimes, but the asylum system not being sensitized when it comes to people who flee because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. A lot of these issues are dealt with by the different LGBT organizations in the different countries. And we have a lot of programs that we're running that are similar. So there's a lot of exchange to be had between the LGBT organizations in the countries around these issues. To mention an example, within FREE we have an outreach program for different government professionals. It's called Pink Competency. So basically it's a professional-centered approach where my colleagues will have the same background as the professionals that they're talking to. So the ones who will be talking to teachers in the school system are teachers themselves, and they will talk about how to make their schools more inclusive. So they're addressing, for instance, they're addressing bullying in schools, how to make the school a safe environment, because teachers want their pupils to learn. There's a lot to learn from these kind of exchange programs. How do you do this outreach to different professional groups within your countries? So that's part of what we really want to look at between the countries. Also, there are some countries that don't necessarily have these kind of outreach programs yet that could learn a lot from the ones who do. So there's this, I think that's one of the things that we're really excited about when it comes to the Nordic, or the potential for Nordic cooperation and exchange.
So that's sharing knowledge. Is there one particular area in which you want to kind of unite to lobby on behalf of?
Yes, there are several areas where we see that we could do something when it comes to political advocacy towards our different governments. I think the one burning issue, I think, for all countries is the access to health for trans people.
Is there one country that's kind of a little bit ahead of the others or leading the way, not just in that issue, but generally in terms of LGBT issues and rights?
When it comes to access to legal gender recognition for trans people, Sweden was the first country out, and Norway followed. When it comes to same-sex marriage, I think then it was Denmark was first. So it's, I think basically Norway, Sweden and Denmark have kind of had the same kind of trajectory. I think the one thing that kind of befuzzles us at the moment is this whole rhetoric around gender that has come up. I mean, there's rhetoric around that there is no such thing as gender, and that our organizations are pushing gender ideology, a radical gender ideology even. And this rhetoric, we're used to this rhetoric coming from countries like, from leaders in Hungary and in Poland. We're not only seeing the religious right using this terminology, we're even seeing some parts of trans exclusionary feminists using this the same terms that we've seen from Christian populist right. So that's kind of strange to us. I think we should never take our rights for granted. History has taught us that.
I was speaking there to Mana Eid, Director of International Programmes for FREE, the Norwegian Association for Sexual and Gender Diversity. That's all for this week's special episode of the Foreign Desk Explainer. Listen out for more of these editions produced by me, Michael Booth, in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers. It was edited by Christy Evans at Monocle 24 in London. Thanks for listening and goodbye.